The Movement Voter Project brings donor support to the best and most promising local community-based organizations with a focus on youth and communities of color, thus working to strengthen progressive power at all levels of government. The MVP's involvement brings forward unlikely voters and helps to organize communities to grow their power and create transformation. Their work is based on the idea that supporting local movement vote groups is the most effective strategy to transform the United States of America. And I just have to add, I believe we really need that. Today, we're spending time with a fierce advocate for the environmental and climate justice movements with experience in community organizing, movement building, and dismantling systems of oppression. And I don't think any of you will want to miss a single word of this powerful podcast. Hey, everybody, I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Impact Earth Advocacy. Building power that lasts, funding local organizing to empower voters. And I had a moment before we got on the air where I called our guest and I said, when I get all worked up like this, and it's such a passionate issue for me, I kind of have to talk through it a little bit so that I appear coherent and make sense, because I get so up in my head and in my heart about what we're going to talk about. And our guest calmed me down, and it was wonderful. And I want to say what I said to her. This could be one of the most important, impactful podcasts that I have ever had the pleasure of being a part of. So no pressure to the guest, but please join me in giving a warm welcome to Julissa Arce Mendez. She is the director of the Climate Vote Fund Movement Voter Project. And as I said, I'm certain this interview is going to be reflective of the fierce advocate that she is for environmental and climate justice movements in the United States and Puerto Rico, which, by the way, is a part of the United States. Her experience is rooted in community organizing, movement building, and dismantling systems of oppression, as I said in the intro. Julissa seeks to support social movements through accompaniment, and I loved that word, and looks to continue shifting traditional philanthropy's practices to a new paradigm that recognizes, centers, and trusts Indigenous, Afro-descendant, queer, and frontline experience and knowledge. So, Julissa, I'm sure you can tell I'm a little bit excited about having you here and cannot wait to, as they say, get on with the show so that you can start sharing what it is you're doing. Because, as I said, you know where I stand. We have to bring about much needed change in our country for the benefit of so many whose voices have rarely, if ever, been heard. So that's, to me, it's the encapsulation of all you're doing. So let's set the stage for one of the most important interviews I've ever done. Why don't we start with big picture?
Sure.
What is MVP all about, and how do you execute your mission around the country, especially in light of a pandemic? How are you doing it?
Wow, yes. Well, first of all, I just want to thank you for having me and that warm welcome. I'm equally excited to be on the show with you and to talk to your listeners. To talk about issues that I really deeply care about. We can sort of dive in. This has been an extraordinary year on many fronts, as many folks have experienced and are experiencing in this moment. And, my work with the Movement Voter Project started this year. I get the lucky job of working with incredible grassroots groups across the country to help them in any way that I can with this work. And through MVP, we really believe in the work that the grassroots organizations are doing on the ground. For us, that is the most crucial work. The work that needs to be supported and, unfortunately doesn't get supported too much. There's a lot of, I would say, focus on national groups, which is great. but we strongly believe in the place-based work that's happening in local communities. So for us, our mission is to identify those groups, you know, support them on many fronts, whether that's resourcing them directly, working with people who have resources, right? People with money, or anyone really that wants to I like saying alchemize your money, right? To support good work. And we do that through capacity building and many other things. So I would say this year, you know, that's a really good question. I think
it's like, whoa, yeah, go out and organize there. And there's COVID-19, especially in our state,
right.
But in many states around the country where you're working, the COVID numbers are not good, but you're still doing amazing work. So I think that speaks volumes about the people that you've been able to engage.
That's right. And the groups are doing this work, right? These are folks that are impacted on a daily basis on a variety of different issues, including environmental justice issues, including climate justice issues, you know, poverty, a lack of access to many different things. And these are the folks that are in deep relationship with members of their community who are building long-term trust-based relationships with folks who are building together, right, collectively, and who are trying to really figure this out, right? I think, you know, a lot of what's happened this year has taken many of us by surprise. In a lot of ways, we were not prepared for it, but there were communities that actually were prepared because they've been doing this mutual aid, right, work for many years. So I think in terms of the work that we've seen and we've been able to help support along with other allies has been, how do we get support groups to shift, right, their normal organizing strategies, right, like door knocking and canvassing, like in-person events, right, to an online platform, which is really difficult. I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, being on Zoom all the time, it's really painful.
I don't even like the words online platform anymore because I know what that means. Like, I tell people I have Zoom knees, Zoom back, Zoom eyes.
Yeah.
It's been more and more challenging, especially this week where I just want to go out and meet with a group of people and just sit there and have a conversation and it's not being recorded. So yes, it's the most challenging of times to make good things happen, which is what you're doing at a critical time in the nation's history.
That's right. And all while doing it during a pandemic, during, you know, very critical social movement and uprisings, right, around our Black brothers and sisters and siblings and people of color, right, all of the different things that we've experienced, and during an election year. So, you know, there's been a lot of experimenting, I'd say. There's been a lot of really critical pivoting that has happened, and there's some amazing work happening in all of our states. We at Move and Voter Project have key states that we focus in. The top five states being Florida, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Arizona. And we've identified those to be critically important for this election cycle for both the presidential election and Senate key races. And then there's a set of different states that we've also supported that have a variety of different, you know, reasons why we support, whether that's a Senate race or some really great local work that's happening, down ballot races, or just, you know, critical climate and environmental justice fights. And some of those states include Texas, New Mexico, California, New Hampshire, Maine, Georgia, North Carolina. So, you know, I'd say that in the last few months, folks have really pivoted in a really critical way. They've done an incredible job at doing it rapidly, doing it innovatively. And, you know, just seeing that for me as a, you know, as a person who's been in this work for at least the last 4 years, you know, philanthropy and come from organizing, I'm like, wow, like, it's just really incredible that folks are doing it. And it's just a testament, right, to being able to support this work moving forward in the future.
So this is out of sequence. First of all, I don't think I ever had a sequential thought in my life. I am a whirling dervish brain. But while I was doing the research, reading about you, watching the videos, it's such a hard, challenging time for people. And by that, I mean Are they going to get evicted? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be able to buy food? So many life survival issues have come. Are they going to get the virus if they go to work? And yet it appears to me, and Arizona is one great example, where these grassroots organizations are still moving forward. They are still out there. They are still using whatever platforms they can to really get people activated. That's the word I like to use, about what's at stake here. And I will talk about Arizona, because education, underfunded, criminal justice, a disgrace. We're one of the few states left in the country, if not the last one, to have, you know, fulfill 85% of your sentence, when almost every other state has gone to at least 70%. So there's so many issues, local issues. What's the magic pill? How do you get people whose very lives are challenged right now to focus on long-term systemic change, which really matters as well? Mm-hmm. That's a loaded question.
Yeah.
And a very long one, yeah. But help me out here.
No, that's a really great question. And you're not the only one that's asking that question. I mean, there have been people who've been really pondering this question for decades. You know, and I don't think there is a magic pill. You know, I think, to believe that doesn't really do a service for the work that's being done on the ground, right? The really difficult work. And, you know, I think ultimately, you know, based from my experience, has been, you know, deep trust relationship building has been the key, I think, to long-term systemic change. Moving, you know, educating funders and donors and foundations to really move their money to the groups that are doing work with directly impacted people, right? And to give it in a way that trust them, you know, not expecting any return of investment, right? I don't even like that term, right? So it's such an economic way of talking about something that in a lot of ways is really invaluable, right? I think it's educating us, right? Like really questioning all the things that sort of come up, even on, you know, what we call the left, right? On the progressive values, like how do we get really deep to the root causes of the issues that we're seeing today? Really educating ourselves, right? Educating our peers. And I think holding the line and, you know, I know you're reading my bio, and, you know, I think for me, a lot of that work has come down to really being in solidarity with people. Right. I don't necessarily consider myself someone who is a frontline person. My background, my family, I have a family who like worked really hard. They were in poverty and also like middle class, and that kind of fluctuated throughout my childhood. And I know what it's like. I don't consider myself one of those, you know, someone who's directly impacted by a polluting industry, for example, or, you know, living in a place where I can't get out of, right, because of my income status. But I can be in solidarity with someone who is. And when I think about what does solidarity look like, you know, that's sort of like the question for me. It's like, wow, like, well, I think it's trusting that person, right? Really creating space for them, to hear them, to hear what are the solutions that they want to be seen. How do I, you know, capture that information and, you know, educate myself and really how does that information inform the way that I work? So I love accompanying people, because in a lot of ways it just, it really lowers the pressure and, you know, helps me really see, you know, my neighbor, right? This person, or, you know, a community. For who they are, and it makes me feel good to be able to help them in that way.
And it's so important to me when I read this, and I'm like trying to get my language around it, but language is so important. And I underlined and starred the word accompaniment, because that's an approach, that's a mindset, that's a coming from a place of respect as far as I'm concerned. So for example, grassroots and local, that story will change in every community. So this, and if I'm misrepresenting this, say, Gina, you've got it all wrong, and it's okay. You can shame the host. But to me, instead of going in and saying, well, we have all this expertise and we know what the issues are and we're going to train you to bring about change. To me, the sense I got from doing my own investigation is that people have issues that are local. They have cultural ways of dealing with those issues, of communicating with each other, which might be around the family table or the tribal council or at, you know, the LULAC hall. And you say, we have some tools and some money maybe to help you reach your goals. Mm-hmm. And we will help with our expertise to enrich the opportunity and maybe and strengthen the impact. Is that a good way of describing it? What do you need from us and how can we help you?
That's it. That's right. Yeah. And you know, oftentimes I've been really surprised because I've had an idea of what I think it should be and it's completely wrong. And I'm really happy that I was wrong.
Right.
You know, so.
But that's a mindset and an approach to go into it with.
That's right.
It's not like I got all the answers because look at how successful I am and this formula works. That's just BS. There's no formula. There isn't like the same as that magic bullet. It's just not there.
That's right.
So, in terms of, I'm a big advocate, and I know that some of the bigger organizations, Bioneers, for example, mm-hmm. they're working to change the way philanthropies operate. So instead of sitting on huge, mm-hmm. the corpus, keeping it and spending the interest, I've heard some great presentations in the before times when you could actually go to a conference or a gathering. Mm-hmm. You and your organization have to help kind of reframe people's thinking and organize people with large pots of money as well as the person who can do the $5 a month. Is there some way, some strategy, some ideas you can give for how do you approach that? Because mm-hmm. there's very different levels of giving out there.
Yes. Yeah, and they're all wonderful. I mean, I just get excited when someone's like, hey, my kid, you know, it's just really loves your work and they got like $2 they want to give. I'm like, yes, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think it's really powerful when you, you know, we live in a world, right? We live in a capitalist society, right? People make money and there's that exchange of currency and, you know, we have power over that. We have power over our labor and all that. So when someone, you know, that asked me like, you know, I really don't have a lot of money, you know, what can I do? It's like that, just that in itself, you know, being able to choose to put, right, your money into something that you really believe in is such a powerful thing. And yeah, I think in terms of approaches, you know, there are many different approaches. I really like Bioneers, by the way. I'm kind of sad that, you know, I haven't been able to go to
Me
one of those
too.
Meetings.
It's,
yeah, but.
It, you know, we go, our team goes. We usually have three people
so
that
great.
Go. And it feeds us. It
yes.
literally feeds our soul. It gives us great guests. Mm. It gives us new ways of thinking. And the last one I went to, which was the one they had last, there were many, many, I would call them indigenous groups and other groups, Hispanic, talking about let go of some of the money because we need it now.
Yes.
We need to mobilize change now. Yes. We need to be spending things now. We need to get to communities now to change the future. So don't be holding on it, saving it for the future. And they did it in very inspirational and creative ways. Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, you're right. Why have it sit in the bank?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, and I think there's a lot of really wonderful people, I would say, within philanthropy, right, as a whole, and both internationally and domestically, right here in the U.S., who are doing great work around really trying to shift, right? I think it is a framework. You know, I think it's an important work because, you know, it really gets to, I think, your own, as someone with, you know, money, right? Or I think it gets to anybody's root, right? Of like, well, what is my relationship with this money? And where can it be used, you know, the best? And when people ask that question, I say, well, I tend to trust the grassroots groups, the frontline groups, to know where that money will be used best, right? So just the work that it takes from a person asking that question to getting to like, yeah, we need to trust people is a really beautiful, difficult, and painful journey. It is an important one. And there's a lot of wonderful people doing this work. And, you know, asking yourself these tough questions is like, you know, what is my relationship with this money, right? Where can I put it? Are really critical. I also think about, you know, sort of like these, that's like one facet I think of, like, you know, funding, the funding world. And then there's also like this really beautiful grassroots fundraising that I see all the time. And I see it a lot in the queer community who, you know, people who are supporting each other and like, hey, you know, I have these bills and I can't, you know, move forward. Can we do a GoFundMe and like help each other? And people fundraise within them, you know, within each their communities and the folks closest to them. And that I think is a really beautiful testament of like the power, right? That we as individuals who aren't born rich, you know, don't have a trust or anything like that, that we could, you know, alongside with other people can really pool our money to help our communities out. I think that's really powerful. And it just feels so good to see community coming together in that way. So, you know, I think it's a long journey, you know, and I tend to meet people where they're at and come at it from a perspective of, you know, just really sharing what the grassroots frontline folks want me to say and being in alignment with that. And also trying to really balance, right, this like meeting folks where they're at, like, you know, you're here, but let's see where, you know, a couple of more steps on this direction can get you. And if you feel good around that. So,
and your way, your approach, to me is the successful approach, starting with meeting people where they're at instead of trying to get them where you think you want them to go or where they should go. So when it comes to what lit us up, and by us, I mean Kelly finding the information about you and saying, you know, we have to have her on as a guest. Of course, our number one focus and area of change that we want to bring about comes to bringing a more sustainable and socially just world into reality. And it's not looking so good. I mean, seriously, I heard one of the candidates here say CO2 emissions are going down. And I mean, the audience did an audible like,
a gasp.
Where? Can I go live there? But what lights you up are climate and environmental issues. Mm-hmm. So why? Why are you focusing on that? Why is it so important to you to focus on those areas, especially as it relates to the people who have no voices? And to me, the people that are on the lower socioeconomic and marginalized communities get hit hard first, have very little ability to bounce back in many cases. So what's your why in terms mm-hmm. of climate and environmental issues? Why does that light you up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, but before I answer that question, I also wanted to add previous to our, you know, what our discussion is, you know, what I love about the Movement Voter Project is that it's an organization that really gives people the opportunity to be connected to work that's happening on the ground. Oftentimes, there's just so much going on and folks don't know what's happening. You know, the way that we're set up is really unique because we have folks who are from the communities, who have organizing experience, develop relationships in their state, so their state advisors, who are constantly in communication with folks, right? Like in Arizona, we have a state advisor who's connected with a lot of the amazing groups down there.
Right.
And, you know, we get to hear, like, you know, from the get-go of like, hey, what's happening? What's the update? You know, what do you need resourcing for and so forth? So we're able to take that information and really share it with people who are interested in perhaps maybe funding in Arizona particularly, or even in, you know, a particular issue like climate. And, you know, the wonderful thing about MVP is that it is sort of a connector. We connect people who have resources and want to give to groups that are doing great work. And I don't know of any other group that does that, actually.
I don't either. Really, yeah, and I've been doing this for 12 years. That's why I called you. I was so excited. It's like, OMG, this is what needs to happen in every state.
That's right. Yeah. And it just, you know, I think it's that connection oftentimes is lost. And just to be able to have that is just so beautiful. And it's just, you know, I think it's building a community of people who really care and are moving folks to support this local group, this local work that's really critical. But back to your question about, like, why do I care about, you know, climate and environmental work? You know, why is this, what drives me, basically, is what I heard. And, you know, I've been asking myself that question since I started doing this work. And I would say that I think since I was very young, I've always felt a deep responsibility to protect Earth. You know, I'm not sure where that comes from. I have an idea. You know, I think my parents, my family, my ancestry. I am Puerto Rican. I come from the Caribbean. You know, from a colonized peoples, you know, so there's a lot of resistance movements that, you know, I'm standing on the shoulders of. And, you know, for me, it's just, I feel whole when I'm out in nature. I feel held. I feel like the moments where I find the most clarity is always when I'm in nature, you know, having a beautiful connection with whatever land or place I'm at.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. I think for me, it just, you know, I come from three. I have two younger brothers. I'm the oldest, the only, you know, female. You know, and I think that in itself had a lot to do with my outlook in life of like fighting and like being against the patriarchy and, you know, just like always, you know, being in struggle with that. And I think things, you know, just kind of the way the universe works, you know, I'm a big believer in things really just sort of mash up. And when you call things in, you know, they work. And I think in a moment in my life, I was able to get into this work and really build a career out of this. It's what I've wanted always. And I was able to do that about 7 years ago, back in my home, which where I grew up in Orlando, Florida. And, you know, I think for me, the critical piece around climate is the people, right? Our communities. And through my own learning and my own reflection and, you know, talking with different folks from across the world, you know, for me, it's really clear that the same root causes of the other oppressions that we're dealing with, like poverty, patriarchy, criminalization, right, are the same roots as the ones that are giving us a climate crisis.
Totally. Totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally.
And you know, there's no getting away from that. Once you get here, you're like, wow, everything really is connected, right? We're fighting the same the same enemies, I guess, you know, that for lack of a better word. So, or the same structure, right? The same systems. So, you know, when I feel like the climate conversation in general, more on the mainstream, is it's such a downer. I don't know how to say it, you know?
And we've got to change that message. We're talking about hope, possibility, change, mitigation,
That's
adaptation.
Right.
And how do we help turn that around? I'm with you. And, and there are days, believe me, when I go down the very dark rabbit hole of why am I even doing this? And like you, I'm doing it because I was called to do it.
Yes.
And my journey started in the rainforest. You talk about being in the silence and realizing what's happening with the devastation of the Amazon rainforest. Come back and have a voice for that, Gina, is what I heard. So I understand you felt called. And it's a complex carbohydrate, though, because sometimes it's a reach to connect X to climate change, but I can always do it. And I love to educate people about the climate refugees. I mean, people, mm-hmm. pay attention. They're knocking at our doors. They're starving. There's huge droughts, our food supplies. So I could feel what you were saying. It's like, yes, this is something that we better pay attention on because it impacts all people.
That's right.
Ultimately.
That's right. Yes, it does impact all people. And, you know, it does also impact them very differently.
Yes.
And I think have to, you know, there's a lot of solutions that are coming out, you know, and from all over the place. Because I think, you know, with the climate conversation, it, you know, people do feel the urgency. And there is an urgency, right? That, you know, we're not naive to that. However, you know, I always question, like, where are those solutions actually coming from? Who is coming up with these ideas?
Who thought that up?
Right.
Like, that's not it.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, I think there's a lot of peeling that has to happen, right, to get to this, like, to the root around the climate conversation. And I'm much more excited about, you know, instead of focusing on this United Nations IPCC, you know, report that we have, like, 15 years left, like, that for me isn't actually very helpful. It is important information. But, you know, I'm much more excited about flipping the script on that conversation and being like, well, what do we need to do now?
Right.
Right? To really be prepared, right? There's a preparedness that is inevitable that we have to embark on. Right? How do I accept the truths of what is happening to the planet, to our people, to our animals, right? To our water, our air. And what is it that I can do to be able to complement, right, the efforts of people who are the most impacted, who are fighting, who have been fighting this for decades, right? This isn't anything new for a lot of our communities. So, you know, the building the new is the exciting part for me because it's like, wow, I can actually maybe experiment and, you know, collaborate and build something different we've never seen before.
Right, right. The creative part.
And that gives me joy and hope.
And God knows we need joy and hope. And a perfect example to me that is kind of a spotlight that is a result of the pandemic, I've listened to a lot of indigenous people in Arizona and around the country, mm-hmm. saying,
yes,
yeah, wash your hands every time and do it for at least X amount of seconds and use soap. And oh, by the way, I have 6 people in my family and we have no running water.
That's right.
And that is an impact of not just climate change, but, you know, social injustice. Mm-hmm. So there's people that have to drive 5 miles, 10 miles and bring bottles of water to their home. Mm-hmm. It brings a whole new meaning to wash your hands for 20 seconds every time you have contact with people. So to me, it puts a highlight mm-hmm. on the disproportionate impact on marginalized communities all over again. It's like you said,
yes.
One of the most critical things you said is it's been going on forever. And the pandemic has helped to elevate the conversation in some cases mm-hmm. Because the pandemic doesn't care who it, you know, COVID doesn't care who it infects. But
right.
To your point, some of these issues are so long-term and so systemic. And the positive part is, let's put a spotlight on that and how we can change it. I feel the same way about green energy. I mean, it's the utility company that's one of my major sponsors that I'm proud of the partnership. Mm-hmm. Every time I turn around, their metrics for moving to more renewables has been moved back, not forward. Mm. They're saying, okay, we're going to do this mm-hmm. by this year. No, we're going to bring it back for 5 years. We can do that by this time. So mm-hmm. they're on board with helping to, you know, the race for the cure, so to speak, of mm-hmm. we need to have more green energy.
Yes.
So I have a deep, long question.
Okay.
I love to listen to it, but this is from Kelly.
Okay.
Because sometimes I'll call her and I'll say, what do you want us to learn from, you know, Julissa? And I wrote it down and this is what she said.
Okay.
You are one of the people doing the work in very specific area, moving important issues forward to bring about much needed change. You live it every day. You're getting funding. You're organizing at a local level. So she said, what I want to know from her is, what does she want us to understand that we need to know because we are not living it every day. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, my little question, my little sidebar was a very good friend of mine at the University of Arizona, Diana Liverman. I was talking about, my daughter said, Mom, I don't even know if I should have children. Like, is there going to be water? Mm-hmm. And Diana looked at me and she said, Gina, tell her not to worry. Your family's always going to have water. Mm-hmm. Not because we're in the, you know, 1%, mm-hmm. but because we have resources mm-hmm. and extended family, and we have the ability to move to where there is water. Mm-hmm. So all those things. So mm-hmm. what we wanted to know, and I said, you're right, what's your why, mm-hmm. and why should it matter to my life? Because when you talk about accompanying, you have that down. I know it should, but help us understand that on any given day, because you're living it. And you want people like me who is living a different mission, but an inclusive, aligned mission. I'm not living it every day with people that are starving or, you know, have the impact of climate change on them terribly. My word for the day for the past 6.5, 7 months has been gratitude. So mm-hmm. what do we need to know? Because we do care.
Yeah. No, thank you so much for sharing that question. First, I would like to say that you don't have to live it, you know, have a full-time job in this work to give or to make an impact, a positive impact. I think that's one of the big learning lessons for me in the last year has been that, you know, having been in some variety of position, right? Whether it's a movement, philanthropy, or if it's like direct organizing, you know, in my community or working in local government or, you know, at some point, right? Serving the people. You know, I think, you know, having been doing this work for 7 years in those roles, I've seen some really beautiful, incredible work happen with people who are just, you know, have like retail jobs or restaurant jobs or, you know, who are in an office. I really think it's about self-educating, building community, right? Having deep relationship with the people who are around you, right? And whether that's in your neighborhood, in your church or your, you know, religious temple or whatnot, whether that's at a bowling game or right. Your little league.
Back in the days when people could bowl.
Right, when one could be out there with your cousins, whoever, your built family. So, you know, I've seen some beautiful organizing happening in those spaces that folks wouldn't call organizing, right, in the ways that we think about it. But it is.
Right.
It is organizing.
Yes.
And I think it's you know, it's important. It's really important, if not, you know, even more effective, right? Because you have these deep relationships. You know, I resonate so much with that statement that you made around, I think, your daughter saying that, you know, she doesn't know if she can have kids. I actually have a lot of friends who have been there. I have been there myself. you know, I find strength, and I know this is, you know, different for everybody, but for me personally, you know, I find strength in knowing my own history, in knowing who were the people in my family, in my culture, right, in my peoples who resisted, right, who resisted white supremacy, who resisted displacement, who resisted the patriarchy, right? Poverty, and they did everything they could to survive. And not have that survival impact them to the point where it made them resentful or bitter, but that they were able to find joy in that struggle, right? To survive. And that for me has been really eye-opening because I look at my parents, I look at my grandmothers, I look at my various, you know, women in my family who have had to deal with this for generations, and I find strength in that. That's not going to be the case for a lot of people, right?
Right.
You know, but I find strength in that. I find strength in doing this work in people around me, you know, people who find joy amongst among this craziness, you know, the thing, this white supremacy patriarchal world, you know?
Yes. That people are fed up with.
We are fed up with
fed
it.
Fed up. I'm done.
Yes.
I'm over it.
We are. We're
Let's
done.
Let's bring around Let's, some change.
Right.
That's the joy.
Ready for the new.
That is
We're
the
ready
joy.
For the new.
Yeah.
And the joy of moving forward. There's no going back. That, no. You know, there isn't. There's no.
No,
there's
I really no, believe that.
There's paralysis and not doing anything now, you know?
Right.
So there's only forward.
There's only forward. I agree with
there's
you.
There's only forward.
And it's interesting to sit here and really being fully present and listening to you. And I always reflect on, where did I come from? And my kids have thanked me and my husband for literally said these words, thank you for raising us the way that you did, because they're all activists in their own way. Mm. I mean, they are there.
That's beautiful.
And whether we like it or not, white people are the people in power right now. So we have to change it so that changes. And we are there too. It has to be a much more wonderful, more highly evolved, inclusive. And where did I learn it? I learned it at my dining room table with my mom and dad. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming home from school and asking my dad, what is a kike? And he almost choked.
Oh, my
he
goodness.
Said, where did you learn that word?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, someone said it at school. Mm-hmm. And we had this really long discussion about what that meant. And he said, you know, Mr. Meller? And I went, yes. And do you know so-and-so? And I said, yes. And she said, and he said, well, that's what a kike is. That's what people would call him because he's Jewish.
Wow.
And I was like so upset because I loved Mr. Meller. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it just, those life lessons, I can remember that. And when I read the book, Black Like Me, mm-hmm. it changed my life forever.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing I knew, I would never know what it's like to be Black, ever. So don't even act like that you have any understanding for what that walk would be. So you're talking about, you learned it in your own family unit to go forth and then make changes around. That, to me, inspires me.
Mm-hmm.
So back down to earth here. I love this conversation.
Yeah.
I love how conversational it is. But when it comes to, like, concrete things,
mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you do to help in local communities?
Yeah.
Is it money? Is it tools to help them do it? Like, mm-hmm. do you help with computers? Things that are just necessary to any successful, organized movement that can build on itself. What are some of the
yes.
tangible things that yep. people will get a sense for that you do, that you're doing a lot of in Arizona?
Mm-hmm.
And I hope people will watch the video on your website.
Yes.
That's going to be my request. So what what kinds of support and accompaniment do you do?
Yeah. So, you know, the Movement Voter Project, we support groups. Once a group is a partner, we support them, whether that's moving money for a particular campaign,
right?
Whether that's capacity building, so helping them be a stronger organization. You know, that can mean a lot of things. That can mean like having physical space, right? An office space. It could mean
yes.
providing them with tech tools like computers or phones. It can also mean helping the staff of a particular organization or the members gain the skills that they need to run an effective and healthy organization. So we within Movement Voter Project, we do that. We also, I think, you know, we also do other things that we don't necessarily advertise, but, you know, for us, it's really important to be in solidarity with groups. And this work is really difficult. I think, you know, being close to the groups is really critical, having relationships with them where they trust us, you know, so just building trust with them is something that we do, listening to them, trying to help them come up with solutions if they request that of us. You know, if we can't directly give them the money that they need, you know, part of our work is to look for people who can. So
connecting. I mean, that's so important.
We do a lot of connecting. Yes.
Yeah.
We do a lot of connecting. And we love it when groups, you know, are at a point where they want to work with each other. So we facilitate and foment connections that way too. That's through the Movement Voter Project. You know, I think there's also a really wonderful work that happens that groups, from my experience and from what I've heard, like, want to do, but just don't have the capacity to do, which is, you know, working with funders, right? That's a whole other world. So we're able to really...
It's a whole other world. For sure. Change that hat. It's very different. Very different.
That's right. So in a lot of ways, you know, I don't think that we're an intermediary, but you know, we do intermediary work in that way, that we're like in the middle, right? Between amazing groups that are doing work on the ground and funders who have the resources that want to donate, but aren't connected. So we try to, make those connections too.
And that's wonderful for a donor to know, I really want to do the right thing. I want to know it's going to make a difference. And then to be able to be gently guided or pointed in the direction of what it means to support a grassroots community that needs just maybe money, mm-hmm. maybe an office space, all of those things that you said that will help at least give them a much better chance of success.
That's right.
And that to me is the company part. I love that word. I'm probably going to steal it now.
That actually comes from... that comes from some work that I did internationally. If you wanted to learn more about accompanying, I suggest that you look up solidarity philanthropy. It is a model of philanthropy that I have worked on, and it is kind of breaks it down there. The group that coined it or helped coin it is Grassroots International.
I read about that and your work with them. Yes, Grassroots International.
Yes. Okay. That for me was that sort of framing was really life changing for me, because it just really helped me, you know, first, like, I'm like, wow, like, I didn't know what the heck I was talking about, you know?
And then, isn't that great? That was like me starting a radio show. I wish that was filmed on camera when I came home and said to my husband, I'm going to start a radio show. And he looked at me like, you're going to do what? You don't know anything about radio. You've been interviewed twice on the radio in 40 years. I'm like,
but look at you now.
I know. I said, how hard can it be? Little did I know, because I think a lot of people that go off on a path, if they knew how hard it would be, they would have second thoughts. But once the bug gets you and it doesn't ever go away.
Yes.
So this is kind of I don't mean it to be a lofty question, but I ask myself this question. If you had a magic wand, and if you knew that every single person listening to this was willing to take one action to support your work or to get involved in some way, what would that wish be and why?
Just one?
I know. That could be the answer. There isn't one. It's like that silver bullet. There isn't one.
There isn't one. That's right.
There isn't one.
There isn't
That's
one.
The first answer.
Yes. Well, I would love to have a magic wand. I'm a huge, you know, Potter, witch, warlock fan. That would be great.
Right. I would love to have a magic wand too. Or a genie in the bottle. Three wishes would even be okay.
That's right. So let me think about this. Well, I think it's, you know, asking yourself, how can I be in solidarity with the people who are most impacted? Like, first, identifying who are the most impacted people. Where do they live in your community? What are they saying? And thinking about how can you support that work? That's one.
But that's a wonderful answer. And it basically is... educate yourself and move forward. That's, to me, that is a magic wand, because explore what is going to bring you joy by your opening yourself up to what the needs are and the pain and suffering and the opportunities. It's like you said, it's not all Debbie Downer stuff. It's like you can have a big difference mm-hmm. by doing X in your own community. So,
yes.
I mean, like our Rotary Club, this sounds ridiculous, but one of our volunteer projects is sorting dog food on Saturdays, because companies are donating huge bags of dog food. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't have the people power to put them in baggies and distribute them, because people can't afford to feed their pets.
That's right.
So to me, that's a thing that you could do, and it makes people feel good. At least they're doing something.
Yes.
So I think you're right. It's like, just get interested and then get excited and then get involved. To me, that's the journey.
That's right. Yeah. And I think the moment, you know, it's really asking us, you know, to use one of the tools that we have available to us, right? For those who have it, right? There are folks who live in this country who don't have this tool.
Right.
But it's voting. I mean, that's such a critical piece of this.
You took my answer. That's just wrong. We should have rehearsed this because I was going to say my magic wand would be vote. So there you go.
We are in alignment.
We are in alignment. It's like movement voter project, people, vote.
That's right. You need to vote. You have this tool, and it is one tool of many, but it's a critical one. And register to vote. Get, you know, your friends to do it. Just, right. You know, if you have a close-knit, even if it's two people, five people, whatever it is, like, just get them, you know, engaged. And yes, it is an election for president, but there are also some very critical things that are going to be on the ballot.
Critical.
You know, in Arizona, you know, we're talking about Arizona. There's the Arizona Corporate Commission race that's happening that is really important.
Really, really, really important.
For the state's public utility, right? Because it's a commission. So they get to decide a lot of things around energy, water. So
lots of power at that corporation commission. Lots of power.
Yeah, and that's not something a lot of people actually really know about, right?
Right. They don't even know what the corporation commission does because it doesn't sound like it mandates policy for utility companies and water companies.
Yes.
It's not intuitive.
It's not intuitive. That's right. But they do.
Right.
So, you know, there's people who are running for local elections, statewide, right? State, House and Senate races. Your district attorney races are very critical, especially in this moment, right? Your judges, which honestly, I mean, they are not the sexiest thing to vote for, right? Like, it is just really confusing. But judges are just so critical, especially in a moment, right, where our civil liberties are being taken away chunk by chunk, right? These are the people who make decisions around your rights. So, you know, if the presidential election, you know, doesn't feel like it's something that's in alignment with you, you know, I would say please reconsider.
I was going to say, yes, that really is important, folks.
It's very important. Yes.
There's so much at stake in this election at every level. And to your point, you know, my daughter Katie said, did you see this yet? And it's the voter pamphlet for Arizona. And you know what? It makes my eyes roll back in my head. And I'm not out wondering if I'm going to lose my house or if my unemployment is going to be extended.
That's right.
It has hit us, yes, but I would look at that and think, who cares? I need to go get more hours on my job or whatever, but there's complicated issues. I think a lot of times the wording is intentionally deceptive.
Totally.
That you think you're voting for something and you're actually voting against it. I can't tell you how many times mm-hmm. that's happened. And to your point, in Arizona, I shared with you when I called you before the show, Laura Conover is a person that I worked really hard to support for Pima County District Attorney, and she was the underdog, came late to the race, the campaign was not pretty, and I will tell you, I would be shocked if your organization didn't have something to do with her winning, because she won, and it was a big deal. So she did grassroots. She had people that I've known for 40 years mm-hmm. out working her campaign and endorsing her and raising money. And people were writing to me about what are we going to do because of all the slick packaging that the other candidates could afford. So it does help and it does work. And we need a lot of change in our state.
We do.
Who do you think pays for all those private prisons, people? If you think you're safe, your money isn't.
That's right.
So I don't know if there's anything else you want to add. To me, the time flew. It was delightful. It was everything I love to have happen in a discussion with a guest. So I'm happy. I want to make sure you're happy.
Great. I am happy. I'm happy that we had this beautiful conversation. And I would love for folks to check out the Movement Voter Project. You can find us at movement.vote. If you are interested in, you know, donating and just don't know where to, you know, what to do, there's a really great separate funds that you can go online and, you know, pick and choose. Even if it's $1, $2, $5. And, you know, I think finding joy in this moment is such a radical act. And I really just wish everyone who's listening to take a deep breath, find their joy, you know, and continue the struggle that we are all in together.
What a wonderful way to have the final thought. I mean, one of my favorite expressions now is like, well, does it spark joy? And I know it's from the person that's talking about decluttering your home, but it has massive applications. And
yes,
pretty much if it doesn't, you should think about if you're needing to do it. And that doesn't mean being really happy about it. You can be doing some painful things, but deep down, it does spark joy. So
yes,
I thought this was delightful. And my request is that people really do go to movement.vote and educate yourself. Watch that 12-minute video. It is powerful and it gives you hope and it will get you out of a depression, because I was close to the precipice of the dark side. Mm-hmm. And I thought, these are all young people that are building a better future for all of us. So my last words are, I'm honored to meet people like Julissa. I so value the work that you do and the work that others are doing around the country to make the country one that I am actually going to be proud to live in again someday. I had no idea how bad it was. And with you, I join in saying, if I had a magic wand, it would be vote. Educate yourself on the critical issues in your community. Support the candidates or the propositions that you believe in, or the judges. Are they aligned with your values? And as cliche as it sounds, our time is now. The timing right now is critical. If you don't feel you have a voice, let it be heard, because there's room for you at the table. And if you get excited about that, it would be a bonus to get other people in your circle of influence to do the same thing. So, Julissa, I am thrilled, honored. It was wonderful to have you with us. And as I always end the show, it's to our listeners, because without you, there would be no us. So thank you. And all of the links that you mentioned, Julissa, will be on our show page. And I made notes of other people I need to send this to that were either mentioned in the show or that I think would really be excited about your cause. So thanks for taking the time and for everything you do to make my world better.
Thank you so much, Gina, for the work that you do. I'm happy to be a part of it.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. Go out there and make stuff happen.